Kay Morris, and you are about to embark on the next Pioneer Knowledge Services Because You Need to Know, a digital resource for you to listen to folks share their experience and knowledge around the field of knowledge management and nonprofit work. If your company or organization would like to help us continue this mission and sponsor one of our shows, email bynTK@pioneer-ks.org. Well, we've danced through a volume of information that you've presented, Frank, but we're going to end up your three-part series talking about, especially I think it's poignant for our current state of the world, how about some productive conflict?
You want to fight?
We know what destructive conflict is, right? Yeah,
let's fight this out.
The world seems to have invested a heavy amount of, as you had said in the first segment about tribalism, a tribal mentality which makes things pretty black and white in beliefs. And then everything gets to be a defensive posture. How do organizations work through that, regardless of what's going on out there in the globe? How does an organization address their people to help alleviate some of the conflict?
Well, in terms of tribal anger, I would give a reference. The great leadership trainer, John King, has written a number of books on tribal levels. I'll just plant that as a seed.
Thank you.
The second thing is productive conflict is new. I was invited by the research and development division of Wiley Publishing a few years ago to test new instruments in the field. And productive conflict drew out from the depth of the DISC research the emotional temperaments and postures of the DISC and developed a profile that helps us get a grip on our emotional ride. I guess some people would say it's related to the blood sugar curve, the insulin blood sugar curve. Mm. We're in a different state of mood depending on where our bodies are in that blood sugar curve too. So I'm not going to get into the physical part.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a physiological concept that I think a lot of people just kind of graze on over as they're drinking their Red Bulls and eating all kinds of junk.
Well, let's suppose you and I had a fight. Wouldn't it be easier for us to have breakfast or coffee together and say, let's work this out, rather than 10 o'clock at night?
Yeah.
Lord knows, everybody's, we're loaded up.
Yeah.
Our emotional dollars are spent for the day, and Lord knows where our blood sugar is at that point.
You know, and you bring up a point that I learned a long time ago, that it is okay to deflect a conflict for later. And it's kind of a corporate concept when you say, we're going to table that for now. Or, you know what? That's a hot topic right now. I don't have the energy around that. Let's table it and schedule a time for tomorrow or Thursday. And it kind of, here again, it de-energizes
a lot.
That thing a little bit.
I will say, honestly, I had the opportunity to spark and lose my temper once with a very valued friend and mentor. And I realized it was more important for me to express my anger and to vent than to get back to the subject. So my friend did the right thing and said, Frank, you're tired. Go to bed. It was late. and we did. And the next day I apologized for the temper and we got back on track.
That's a good observation. You know, when you've got somebody that's your counterpart that can observe and has observed your behavior over time, I have a certain somebody that knows when I'm hungry and angry or grumpy. It's like, all right, you need to eat something because you're a little out there.
We can take a tip from the 12 steps program, the famous 12 step program developed by Bill W and Bill C, I forget. And that is stop whenever you're halt, H-A-L-T, hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Just pause. Be aware of the environment.
Yes.
But once again, this is not about conflict resolution. It's about reading yourself and your own first thoughts. Being aware of when you receive an ego bruise, what is it you're saying to yourself? What is that impulsive self-talk? For myself, as I explained in an earlier session, I have a tendency to sulk when I'm not in the limelight, if I'm not on stage, if I have to, you know, rotate the role and be the sergeant at arms today instead of the speaker. I must calm myself first. That's the very first rule. Just like in martial arts, before you go into a fight, you don't go in with a rage, you go in calm, with a calm mind, so that your reflexes can automatically make the right decisions. Similarly, with approaching conflict with someone, as difficult as it might be because of hurt or angry feelings, it's important to indulge in meditation. And I don't mean just being silent, but really practice in meditation, calming and trying to get to that place that's of no thought. It's that space between this thought and that thought. And calming oneself can actually bring peace to the other person too. And you won't be so easily triggered by insults or keywords that hurt.
So how does an organization adopt what it sounds like a Zen environment?
Yamaha used to send their motorcycles over here in the 80s. I don't know if the policy's still here. When we were fascinated with the art of Japanese management, which was really ideas that were given by Deming, the instructions said, open the box, lay out your tools and pieces, and then sit quiet for a few minutes. Settle yourself before you begin the job. What a good idea.
So how do you institute that? Other than when you've got an organization of that structure, if you've got a 5-person organization, small nonprofit, let's say, how does a nonprofit of a small stature be able to engage productive conflict in maybe they're surrounded by tactical operations where there's no time for such reflection?
Very good question. If there's no time for the reflection, if I was actually treating this group, a 5-person nonprofit, I would have them read their profile at home alone and spend time not just on the basic level of interpretation, because there's actually 3 levels of interpretation. There's the typical signs and signals, the strengths and weaknesses. There's the interpersonal piece. And then there's the deeper motivations, which are oftentimes what we call hidden thoughts. So if we want to learn about how we react in conflict, we must first look at our behavior, identify the associated self-talk. Oh, they don't like me. They're not giving me the microphone. And then reframe that consciously. Think, what else? How else could I look at this? Oh, they're not giving me the microphone because Joe still needs to conclude what he's talking about, or Mary needs to make a point, or I am really not needed in this conversation. I should just be patient. So having that discipline of checking our first thought, our first impulsive instinctual thought. These thoughts are revealed in the podcast assets that are built into an online platform whereby these 5 people could first study themselves, but they can also map out the entire team. And before they even meet for training, they could see where everyone else lands on that circumplex. And they can also do a one-on-one online dyad comparison. So before they even come into the meeting, they can see, oh, Edwin doesn't like when I tease about blank, or he finds this kind of phrasing disrespectful. Oh, I didn't know that. That's just my natural style. So that would prepare people for an actual training, to answer your question directly, that to do that study, to study themselves, more so themselves, and last of all, to look at what's called their resistance meter. For each of these dyad reports, it'll say, when planning with Edwin, notice that he likes to do this, but you have resistance to this.
So there's a prescription. There's a prescription out of all this.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
If someone does the homework, it works.
Yeah.
I want to say this, though. You know, my one disclaimer, it's not a quick fix. It takes time for people to change. And those who are involved in leadership development know this. That's why powerful leadership courses are 6 months, a year, 16 weeks, whatever. It takes time. There's no guarantee, and it doesn't always feel comfortable. Mm. However, just like a bridge that can take a million tons, it could take a few tons at a time. The maxim is, be prepared for this type of meeting to feel a little bit uncomfortable for a short period of time. Others will appreciate that, and the next meeting will be even more harmonious. And yes, you will get to that level where differences can be acknowledged and discussed objectively.
Well, is it your position to think that organizations should turn about organizational divots, I'll say disconnects, and educate them that conflict is not bad? And you have that, like, you know what? Hey, I want to say something here. If you've got an opposing view, the organization has to set the stage or the build the scene, you're safe to do this. You know,
yes.
If given that the organization is working as their mission is to do X, you know, hey, I'm not arguing with you just because you got a red truck and I've got a blue one. I'm arguing because there's something that's mission critical or mission effective that needs to be voiced. And so that's, I think there's a character flaw. I don't want to say flaw. There's a character lack in some people that can see things, they observe things, they feel things, but they will not voice anything because they're fearful.
You're actually describing the pure C, the one that doesn't want conflict. Now, none of those styles like conflict, but they approach it in different ways. The S's and C's particularly don't like conflict. But if you're inviting me to a team meeting, the five people at the nonprofit, and we know we're going to discuss differences, and you open it up, you're the leader, with saying, above all else, let's agree to certain principles. One is mutual respect. The second one is total listening. Let's be silent for at least 30 seconds after someone speaks, because sometimes a speaker is collecting their thoughts to make a summary statement, or perhaps we need to absorb it, but let's not speak immediately and have another one of those stupid meetings where people just take turns talking. Yeah. They don't really listen and help the other person reach the depth of what they're discussing. The third thing is patience and safety. If a manager, if a leader creates an environment of safety, then the actual process of productive conflict will work.
So what's the definition of productive conflict? Do you have one there?
Yeah, there's six steps to it. The first one is focus on the issue, not the person. Or as Gandhi might have said, fight the problem, not the person. Secondly, communicate openly and honestly. You have a right to your feelings, no matter how crazy they are or what, you know, Freudian trigger they hit. You have a right to your feelings.
Wait a minute now. You don't have to listen to the internal imprint voice of whoever that childhood voice is saying, oh, you shouldn't be crying. You shouldn't be this. You shouldn't be that.
No. Feelings are the richness of experience. Anger is not a bad thing. It got such a bad rap. Just like D's get them. Here, the D's are biased oftentimes. The other three seem friendly, but, you know, we pick on those. But no reason for that. What's wrong with conflict? It happens all the time. Geez, my family is the family that puts fun into dysfunctional. You know, let's welcome differences. Let's talk it out. We're not going to die. We're not going to eat each other. We're still going to have a life after this meeting. And what's the worst that happens? That we realize we said something stupid or we misspoke? And I think the intensity of fear around conflict is so exaggerated.
But exacerbated, right? It's exacerbated by all those social constructs that people grow up with.
I was taught as a child, don't fight. And then I was taught to fight. How crazy making is that? Yeah. So now I know, we had, you know, in talking to my hypothetical other, I would say, yeah, I know we're in conflict, but let's fight the problem. Let's not have this be something that stays on our grudge file, that comes up in our memory, you know, hating another person or holding a grudge or holding a list of judgments about someone else is like renting your headspace to someone that could be better put to be in present now and to be focusing on future goals. I want to share with you six things that are important to productive conflict. I've already mentioned focusing on the person, not the problem, communicating openly and honesty, seeking common ground. Once again, that could be the thinnest thing. We both love pizza, whatever. Look, we both work at the same company and we both want to see this succeed. Anything statement that uses the word we in it. And of course, active listening, which we don't do enough. I know we do empathetic listening, behavioral interviewing stresses that, but active listening really includes that feedback loop that we often forget about, or we don't make notes of the conversation to reflect back later. The next thing is using problem-solving techniques. There's the SWOT analysis, there's the five whys, there's problem-solving processes, there's many different ways. And in this particular hypothetical group, it would be good to suggest some of these processes and see which ones are acceptable to that group. And last of all, if necessary, seek outside help. I was in one team, there was a conflict between two individuals, and it got so heated, it seemed like there was going to be, you know, almost on the verge of fisticuffs. If you've ever been in an environment where there's a fight's about to break out, you can smell it, right? You can tell when, oh my God, you know, this is about to explode.
It's going
to
get ugly.
Thankfully, to the interpretation of the profiles, you can see these yellow flags beforehand, and you can call Frank D. Dominicus or someone else simply to walk through. I had the opportunity to do this with a construction company, typical conflict, the field and the office, and it went on forever with a false sense of harmony. And it wasn't until we had two sessions, one to look at the profile and to communicate honestly about the triggers, and the second one to dig into the real meat of the problem, which ended up in a happy divorce. The field person really wanted to do their own thing. This is common. And the owner wanted the person to be the perfect employee. Well, that was just not going to happen. So through honest communication, that last session wound down with the owner helping the person leave and start their own business. And he even offered to give support in spinning the other person off. Yeah. And that person who left did not leave angry, bad-mouthing the employer. So it actually led to a positive dissolution.
Well, this has all been extremely fascinating, Frank, and I want to thank you for being here to share your knowledge and your understanding, and it's been very fruitful, and I hope the audience is ready to behave in a different way.
In closing, I have a gift for anyone who wants to just get a simple idea of where they might land on the circumplex, not the complete report, but just a simple infographic. I have a leadership mini profile. If they contact me through email, I'll send a free mini DISC
profile. All right. Profile. All that information will be available on the page in the show notes. Well, thank you, Frank.
Take care.
You have just finished our latest Because You Need to Know, a public service of Pioneer Knowledge Services. Please join us on LinkedIn and find us at pioneer-ks.org.